everybody. Thank you all so much for coming. It's an honor to be with you. So, as I try to do, I'm going to start today with a moral dilemma, and then we'll use our discussion to try to answer the moral dilemma. So, there was once a... the story takes place in Israel. There was once a cell phone company offered... A cell phone company offered all the tenants in a certain co-op building. Remember this one? They offer all the tenants a certain car building. They said that they wanted to use this building as wanted to install a cell phone tower on top of the building, and so they offered all the tenants in the building $100 a month if they would agree to have this cell phone tower installed on the roof, right? So they looked into it. Apparently it was approved by the health board, where the health was approved by the zoning, and the tenants agreed, and they started to install the tower. Okay, so shortly after the tower started to be installed, the neighbors in the next building, who weren't having a tower, now they have a tower right next to them, they started to complain. They said that, there's some reports, so anecdotal reports, that having a cell tower too close to a building, to a residential area, can lead to illnesses like cancer. Also other concerns. And it's possible that they were just jealous of the fact that everyone in the neighbors are getting this extra $200 a year. So they started to complain. So it's A, there were two basic complaints. Number one, the issue of the health, and number two, they said that they were told by a real estate broker that having this cell tower will lower the value of the apartment. So again, they're all co-ops, they all own the apartments. So the question is, so basically these two buildings had this argument over whether it was fair, right, to install the tower, right? The owners of the building said, this is our building, we own this, we all agree, we all discuss this, and we're making this money. It was approved by the zoning board, it was approved by the Board of Health, and there's nothing wrong with it. The neighbor said, number one, you're being insensitive to our concerns. Number one, right, it's possible that it'll cause a health hazard. Number two, even if it doesn't, just having it there will lower. It's not right for you to make the money, and you're lowering our property values. So they had this dispute. The question is, from a Jewish perspective, do they have a right to install a cell phone tower? Do they have a right to install a cell phone tower at the expense of their neighbors? Right, that's the question. Now again, it's their property, and perhaps you could argue the other way, that having a cell phone tower will get better reception. It'll make people's quality of life better. That they'll be able to, the phones will work better. Stronger 4G, right? So what do you say? Right? If this question came to you, what do you think? From a Jewish perspective, is it okay to install a cell phone tower if it'll cause other people health concerns or health worries, as well as a potential concern that will affect their property values?
Well, I would want to see proof that it would negatively impact property value.
You're good. Excellent. So you're saying outside of proof, they can't argue that. Okay, good. Excellent. What else? Any other thoughts?
Would you have to canvass them to see what they thought? What if they agreed? What if the other building agreed?
The other building that has the tower, or
no, that doesn't.
They're arguing.
They're all arguing that they represent the entire building. Okay.
I guess majority. Any other thoughts? Ita, what do you say?
Well, also kind of like an eyesore. So, these property values depend on perception. If people perceive that the values went down, then the question is, I don't know, maybe they have a right to do it, but the question is whether they should do it, whether they morally should do it, is a different question.
So both questions. Do they have a right to, and should they morally? Yeah. From a Jewish perspective, both those questions. Do they have a right to, and should they? What do you think?
I don't think they should.
But also,
the people in the building where it's coming, they're getting $100 a month extra, so that kind of blinds them to, it's like bribery, kind of, to, when you're getting money.
Too good. Excellent. Anything else?
I agree with her.
You agree with Ita? Okay, great. Rivka, what do you say, Rivka?
I think that they shouldn't. I mean, it's like when you put up a fence, you have to put up
the not so nice looking side towards you so that your neighbor doesn't see that.
You're saying therefore that
it's going to affect property value, or, you know, someone's view is of this cell phone tower where it could have been of a mountain, but now it's obstructed, or beautiful trees,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Can they argue that, you know, this is our property? Okay, it's very nice, but you live next door. This is our property. You don't have a right to. You don't have a right to interfere. This is our agreement.
Well, you can't just do whatever you want in your property. I mean, maybe you legally can, but you shouldn't. I mean, you know.
If the zoning allowed it, then, you know, what's wrong with it? You know, they were cleared. The city cleared them.
Yeah, but you asked about Jewish, not legal.
Right. Fine. So, are you saying that if something will cause your neighbors to be concerned about their health? Or be concerned about their property values, then you should not do it.
So it's supposed to love your neighbor as you love yourself.
Okay, good. Rivka, excellent. Okay, so let's put this question aside. Let's start our discussion, and hopefully, as we go through this learning, we'll be able to get some information to answer it. Okay, there's a mitzvah. The Torah says there's a mitzvah to go to Fnei Meshuras Hadin. So this actually, the context is when Yisro is talking to Moshe about establishing a system of courts. So he says, "Teach them Hashaderach LaShiyel Chupa." Right. So basically, our status teaches that the path that they should walk on and that they should do is referring to what's called what is the law and what is going beyond the requirement of the law. So this is a fascinating thing. Basically, you know, by way of introduction, I'll give you the following true story that happened to me. It's a simple story, but I think it illustrates very nicely. So, when I used to live in, you know, suburbs of Boston with Rivka Tyler, and
well, not together.
What was that?
Not together.
Okay. yeah, different houses. Yeah. Although it wasn't too far. It was around the corner, and so I was once I was pulling out of the parking lot in Shul, and a person was parked in a place that they shouldn't usually park. I wouldn't say it was illegal, but it wasn't a typical parking spot. And so I wasn't expecting the car to be there, and I backed up, and I backed up too far, and I hit his car. So, you know, I was frustrated, and I hit the car, and I had to deal with insurance, everything. I didn't know whose car it was. It was a brand new Prius, and I didn't know whose, but I had no choice. I said, I did mitzvah, took out a paper and pen, and I left my name and number, you know, on the visor of the car, and I said, you know, Mitsuina, I dented your car, please call me. Turns out it was a fellow that I know in Shul. I'll tell you afterwards. And he said, that's fine, it's okay. No big deal. That was a brand new car, and for basically that car has a dent in the back. But he forgave me, right? I didn't have to deal with insurance. Now I was so relieved, right? I was so relieved. Bob certainly had every right to ask for my insurance, and, you know, and every right to have me pay for his thing, right? But he sensed that it'll be a whole big hassle, and he went beyond the shusha din, and for the sake of everyone feeling happy, he was mocha. So this is what's called the finish shusha din, which means there are times you have every right, you have every single right to demand something, to expect something. But in certain situations, even when you have a right to do something, even when you have a right for a certain activity, for the sake of making people feel good, for the sake of neighborly relations, for the sake of shalom, right? It's called the mevater, to give in and to go to the finish resistance, and not demand the line of justice, but go within the line of justice in order and for the sake of peace. So our sages call this vitor. Our sages also call this compromising. Yes.
Is
there an optional mitzvah? This means there's absolutely no obligation to do this. But if you wanted to increase shalom, to give in. So basically, if you feel that $2,000 is too much, then you certainly have every right to ask that. Or you ask for most of it, ask for half of it. You have every right to ask every single penny. It belongs to you. And it's entitled to you. But our sages say the following thing. Our sages say this. Our sages give the following two beautiful perspectives to encourage us to try not to stand on our rights, stand on our rights for the sake, and be able to be mivatir for the sake of peace. Number one, our sages feel like this. You know, there are so many times that Hashem ran the world based on judgment, right? Right. The world. If Hashem, if we certainly wouldn't want Hashem to relate to the world with midas hadzin, with justice, with exactly the way we deserve. Right. We certainly expect Hashem to let certain things slide and be forgiving. There's certain times our sages teach that it's possible that all of Klal Yisrael, right, can perhaps be deserving of a certain negative occurrence. All Klal Yisrael can be a certain negative thing is destined to befall on the Jewish people. If a person is mevater and says, you know what, in judgment this is what I'm entitled to, but I'm not going to demand judgments. And if they think I'm doing this for the sake of Klal Yisrael, I'm being mevater for the sake of Klal Yisrael, right? Our sages say that you can forego so much. Hashem will shift from what's deserving, what's from judgment, to compassion. So if a person is willing to forego, is willing to mevater, is willing to forego and not demand the law of judgments, you bring an enormous amount of chesed, enormous amount of compassion to the entire Jewish people and even to the whole world. The Gemara says, we'll explore this a little later on. The Gemara says that the whole entire world sometimes can be sustained by somebody who has every urge to respond and holds their tongue and doesn't respond. I mean, when a person has an urge to say something sharp and holds back. The point is that the same way that if we're willing to let certain things slide and not demand the law of justice, then Hashem says, okay, then you are deserving of that, and therefore relate to clients or relate to the world that way as well. So therefore, while it's not required, doing that is an enormous, enormous mitzvah. This is what's called, by the way, is called the Mishka Hachasidus, which means that you have to weigh the outcome. You know, the outcome of me taking the money, you know, how much good will be caused by, you know, by me taking the money, how much good will be caused by being mevater. It's true. You really can't give a fast and hard principle, but the basic idea is you use your seichel to say where will I be doing the most good, you know? And the truth is this again, if our the goal of mitzvot, as we discussed, is to make us more godlike. The goal of mitzvot is to make us have shleimus, and basically, in every relationship, similarities connect. In every relationship, the differences create friction, and similarities connect. So if we're to be more similar to our, if we become more similar to Hashem, right? We connect to Hashem. So being mevater is a very difficult thing. Very difficult thing. So being out there, giving in is very difficult, right? Because by nature, We demand justice. Even animals are sort of hardwired to demand justice for themselves, right? So even monkeys, for example, they protest when they feel they're being treated unfairly, right? So the point is that it's hardwired into our DNA to demand what's right, demand a fair share. It's not fair, right? So if we can sort of overcome that very very hardwired visceral feeling and say, you know what, I'm going to give in. That creates enormous growth, perhaps more than giving stuff, perhaps, right? And we really grow tremendously, therefore we become very godlike, and therefore we can make enormous leaps in working on amidos, and therefore come close to Hashem. Okay. Different thing is like this. So this is really a general principle called the finisher's name, which means certain things that you're not obligated to do. But we know that Hashem will like us. Now, again, in this case, in my scenario of compromising, certainly Bob didn't have to forgive it, but Bob knew it will be Hashem was certainly very happy if everyone's happy, right? If there's peace. So this is a general principle where there are times that Hashem doesn't require certain things, but we know what Hashem's will is. We know what Hashem really wants, right? So. One of the greatest ways to demonstrate our love for Hashem is to say, you know what? I know you didn't ask for this, but I know this is what you want. The example that Rosh Chodesh brings is in a relationship. He says, you know, in with a husband and wife, right? There are times that a wife wouldn't necessarily ask for something, but you know what your wife likes, right? So therefore, by getting what she likes, it was a great demonstration of your love, right? If you only wait for what your wife asks, you always ask, you know, that's one of your relationship. But if you even simply know, you know what she likes, you know what makes her happy, and then even if she doesn't ask you anticipate that, and you do that, that shows an enormous degree of love. So therefore, going with the finisher then, which means, even though we're not required to do this, but we know this is what Hashem wants Shalom so badly, right? That's a great demonstration of showing we yearn to have a relationship. We yearn to align ourselves with Hashem's goals. You know, we yearn to have a relationship with Hashem. Make sense? We're good? Hello, hello, Levi Avram. So happy you're here.
Shalom.
Welcome to all you. Welcome from Meir. Welcome back. Okay. I want to share with you a beautiful anecdote. So I saw this story. The story comes from a book called Joseph, How One Man Can Make a Difference. It's a book about, he wasn't a rabbi, he was a philanthropist named Joseph Beda. Joseph Beda. They're relatively wealthy family. One time, Joseph and his wife Barbara, they bought a summer home in New Jersey. It was a large home, and in the contract, it indicated that they're going to buy the home with all the furniture. And Barbara was really excited, and she didn't want to have to shop for new furniture. And they relieved that really this new home will come with all this new furniture in the house. So just like a day before the closing, the seller will call him Mark. The seller said, you know what? I want to keep the furniture. I need the furniture. So you know, he said he needed it for his new house, which is down the block, and he changed his mind about the furniture. So Barbara spoke to the attorney, and the attorney said, "Really, it's in the contract. You don't have to give in. You know, you have every right to ask that the key to the furniture." But she talked to Joseph, her husband, and said, "You know what?" And she said, "You know what? Poor guy, Mark's elderly man. It's okay. We'll give in. We'll give it. We'll move after." And that's what they did, right? They moved after, and basically he took all the furniture, and they have to shop for new furniture. Okay. 6 months later, Mark calls back and says, "You know what? I sold you the house. I had some rose bushes there that I planted, and they really mean a lot to me. Come have my rose bushes back." And Barbara's like, "What? Get serious, right? Here, we already had a deal about the furniture, and he backed down on that. And I got some rose bushes right here for 6 months." So Joseph says, "It's okay, no big deal. Okay, let's take the high road. We'll be mabater." So Joseph hired a gardener, paid for a gardener, and he dug up the rose bushes, and he replanted it in Mark's house. Shortly afterwards, Mark passed away. And then it was clear to them, you know what, that as much as it was annoyance for them, for some reason, apparently Mark was elderly and he wasn't feeling well, it meant much more to him than it meant to them. And he was so happy to get those rose bushes back, and they realized whatever benefit they had from having those bushes, they got much more enjoyment from seeing how they made Mark happy, you know, before he died. So here's another example again where technically they had every single right to demand those bushes, that everyone has every right to demand the furniture, but they realized for the sake of shalom, for the sake of achieving again the tachlis of the Torah, which is creating a world of shalom, they were bevater. One other quick anecdote. one time, an Erev Sukkos, a person came to Rabbi Pichas Scheiberg and said, you know, he has a din Torah somebody, and he doesn't want any compromise. He only wants the exact law, exact din, no compromise. So Rabbi Scheiberg said, "Okay, no problem." But let me ask a question. You know, it's before Sukkos. I'm sure you're a pious, you're a very pious Jew. Did you perhaps buy a lulav and eser again? I said, "Of course." Can I trouble you to tell me how much you spent for your lulav and eser? He goes, "Well, I'm very careful about lulav and eser. I spent $200 on my lulav and eser." He says, "Oh, I see that for you, mitzvahs are very, very valuable. I want to give you one of the biggest mitzvahs in the Torah. A great bargain." He says, "You're interested?" He says, "Yeah." So it says, the mitzvah calls b'mevater. Right? It's clear that you are willing to spend so much money. Being mevater is a tremendous mitzvah, enormous mitzvah, and it's at a bargain price. And person, he got the message, and he realized again that being mevater is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that a person is so careful about lulav and eser. There's no reason why they should be so careful about being mevater as well. Okay, one other quick anecdote. One time, two litigants were arguing in front of Rav Meir Simcha Divinsk. They're both arguing about a piece of land. And Rabbi Meir Simcha was trying to get the compromise, and they both stood their ground stubbornly. They both refused to give in. So Rabbi Meir Simcha said, "Come, let's go see the land that you were talking about." So they went there. So Rabbi Meir Simcha took out his walking stick and he said to them, he looked at both of them and said this. He said, He said, here are two people. Each has a valid claim, and they declare, this ground is mine. Right? But this ground is declaring, you are both mine. Right? So I think what he's trying to think one of the story is that you know, there are times that you know, people are willing to fight over a piece of land, right? But the truth is, you know, ultimately, we're all going to be part of land. Well, ultimately, right, our material part, eventually, we're all going to be part of lands, you know, in a relatively short time, you know? So it's, the whatever benefit we get from that lands, right, we get far much more benefit, right? We get far much more benefit from to us and to the world and the Klai Yisrael by being with Bata. Okay, so fine. So that's the mitzvah of going with the finished Yosef there. The next three mitzvahs, oh, actually, I forgot, I didn't pass up the sheet, I apologize. I thought it was. Can I show you there? And there's a mitzvah. Somebody is angry at you. Somebody is rude to you and angry at you to respond with a soft voice. Right? So we have three mitzvahs. Right? One mitzvah, right, not to respond when insulted. Number two, right? Number two, to not to take it to heart. And number three, to speak softly to one who's angry at you. Okay. So how do we understand this mitzvah? So let's quickly read it together. So the Torah writes, Lotana al Rivlito. So then I respond to an argument to turn away. So let's read this together. So then I respond to an argument to turn away. Rabbi Shlomo Ibn Gamriel explained, this verse is similar to what King Shlomo said, do not be hasty to argue. Rather, a person should be among those who hear an insult, but do not respond. For if you do not answer, the quarrel will quiet down. But if you answer, you will increase the argument. Okay. I say that I commanded to have a wide heart, to be slow to anger, and to be among those who are insulted but do not insult others. Hear an insult but do not respond. Who act out of love and are joyous to the suffering. So let's clarify. This is does not mean that we should be victimized and be abused. You know, and if somebody's hurting us, somebody's paining us, somebody is making fun of us, we should stand up and say, you know, we should respond in a way to make it clear that we don't want to be treated that way. The Torah isn't saying we should be victimized. What this is saying is that to develop a personality that we don't bristle at every perceived insult, right? There's so many times when we get insulted, when we get offended, or when we respond in a negative way, it's really to a perceived insult. We think somebody's insulting us, and the person doesn't really mean that. I'll give you an example. This analogy I've used before in the past. But it'll be useful to explain the next few mitzvahs. So, approximately like a year and a half ago, when my youngest daughter was born, so a friend of mine told me, Rebbe Wiener, you know, you really should do more exercise. You really should exercise more. So at first I was insulted. You know, was he trying to say? Is he trying to say that I've gained to put on weight? What's he trying to say? And we were talking, and I was struggling not to be insulted, but look, it was kind of a weird thing to say, kind of a rude thing to say. And then, in the course of the conversation, what he said was, now that you have a new baby, you need a lot of energy, you'll be up at night, getting exercise will give you so much more energy. Then it was clear from the context of the conversation that he wasn't at all insulting me. He was trying to give me good advice, unsolicited advice, to give me good advice about how, you know, how to have more energy, right? So the point of the story is that, right. This is an example. I think so many times that we get insulted, perhaps 90-80% of the time we get insulted, the person isn't trying to insult us, but it's how we feel about it. It's often we interpret the words. We read into the body language. We read into the tone of voice. We read into the implication, and we say, oh, they're trying to put us down. So what this is saying is, we reach a situation where it doesn't even bother you. How do we do that? How do we do that? We're sensitive people. The reason why Hashem made us sensitive. Being sensitive is a two-way street, right? Hashem made us sensitive that we feel insulted because this way we can be sensitive to other people, right? By having a sensitive heart, we could feel other people's pain and we could be empathetic, and that's mitzvah to be empathetic. That's how we can become like God, to be empathetic. Being empathetic is a mitzvah, to feel people's pain. Binos b'am chaveru. But that cuts both ways, right? If we're empathetic, we feel insulted. So how do we develop a mindset where it doesn't bother us? So, So this is really a big discussion. It's really a big question. But really it boils down to what the Torah's version of self-esteem. Now, we touched on this a little bit before, but it really connects to the next thing. There's mitzvah not to take things to heart. Right? How's that possible? How's that possible? Give you a quick demonstration of this idea. There's a story that in the 1930s in Israel, there's a great tzaddik named Rabbi Aryeh Levine, and he was a Talmud of Rabbi Aaron Witzel Cook. Now Aaron Witzel Cook was a great scholar. He saw, you know, the creation of the state of Israel as being the harbinger of the redemption. He really embraced the Zionist movements. And while he's a great righteous person, he was controversial in certain circles. So there's certain we call them Kanaim, certain zealots that were opposed to Rabbi Cook. He was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. But Rabbi Aryeh Levine was a great tzaddik, whose son-in-law, by the way, is Rabbi Eliashiv, you know, great tzaddik. So Rabbi Aryeh Levine was a talmid of Rav Cook, and Rabbi Aryeh Levine was elderly, and he was once walking down the street. It was rainy, it was slippery, and he was on the slippery streets of Yerushalayim, and he slipped on a stone, and he fell face first into some mud. Now, so if you'd seen an elderly man, lying face first in the mud, sprawling, you'd run over, rush over, right? So as he's there struggling to get up, someone screams out, "You got what you deserve!" That's what happens to somebody who's a follower of Rabbi Cook. Kind of terrible thing. So Rabbi Levine gets up, brushes himself off. He says, "My dear Yid, it's clear somehow that I must have insulted you. That I did something wrong to you. Please tell me what did I do to insult you. Please tell me, what can I do to make it up?" And the person was so taken aback at the response. He didn't expect that response. He expected to get into a fight. He was planning for a fight. He was so flustered that he said, I'm sorry. And he walked away, apologized, and walked away. So to me, that story is an illustration of somebody who was so self-possessed, has such a healthy self-esteem that it didn't bother him. It didn't bother him. That crazy insult that a person said didn't bother him. He was actually the other way. He was trying to see what he could do to make the other person feel better. The truth is, though, this is really an important idea. Very often, people that pain are in pain. Meaning that people that pain others, it's usually because they're in pain. People that are happy and confident and walking around with people that are healthy, they don't have a reason to put other people down. People that are unhealthy and people that are bitter and people that have grudges and people that are envious, people that are in pain, they're the ones that put other people down. Therefore, really, what Levin was doing was saying, rather than taking it personally, he was saying, this person is clearly a person in pain. And therefore, rather than being insulted, I want to see what can I do to be empathetic towards him and see how I could help him. But back to our point, how do we reach that level? How do we reach a level where we don't get insulted by an extraordinarily rude thing like that? So